Turning now to your arachnophobia. I know some of you have some of that. If you have any arachnophobia, I want you to try to hang in there for the rest of the hour because we're going to be talking about spiders. And I think you're going to learn stuff about spiders that you didn't know before. Now, personally, I like spiders. I mean, I never kill one if I don't have to. I take them outside. I'm actually the guy on the block whom your kids and your neighbors call over to get the spider out of the bathtub or wherever it is. I'm that guy who does it because I really like spiders. I think that I like spiders. There's some of them that I'm not so crazy about, like the wolf spider, furry little spider. I'm not crazy about it. But other spiders, I'm interested in. And I can understand why some people don't like spiders. Some of them are big and ugly, downright yucky looking. Spiders are predators. They're cannibals. They won't hesitate to eat their own kind, even their mates. And mothers will eat their babies, and the babies, once they're big enough, they're going to eat mom. Some spiders have deadly poisons. You know, if they bite you, you can get stung pretty badly. But that hasn't stopped. All these things hasn't stopped some people from being fascinated with spiders and their relatives. And one of those people is Dr. Greta Binford. She's an arachnologist who studies spiders that can kill you, and she has hunted down venomous spiders all over the world, including this really unique place in Los Angeles. So I understand there's a basement in Los Angeles in a store that harbors some of the world's deadliest spiders. And Dr. Binford studies spider venom. And that means as part of her job, she has to milk the venom from the fangs of the spiders. Now, I've seen snakes being milked for venom. I'm going to find out how you milk a spider for venom. She has milked more than 10,000 deadly spiders. And she says she can carry on a conversation while she does it. Now, that's... how's that for a web of intrigue? Dr. Greta Binford is assistant professor of biology at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon, and she joins us from Portland. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Binford.
Thank you, Ira. Thanks for having me.
How do you milk a spider? Don't tell me very carefully.
Well, first is I put the spider to sleep. It makes it much easier. As you know, spiders range a lot in size. The ones I study are fairly small, and that presents a challenge. A number of challenges. So I put them to sleep. I put them under a microscope, and then I rinse their fangs gently with water. And their fangs are very close to their mouth. So some people aren't clear that their venom actually comes out of separate openings than their mouth. And spiders digest their prey externally. So they have a lot of digestive enzymes as well. And so I clamp them under a microscope, and I give them an electrical shock, about 12 volts. Hmm. And that makes their muscles contract, and their venom glands are surrounded by muscles, and so the venom squeezes out. But what also happens is they vomit. And so one of the big challenges is trying to keep the venom from being contaminated by vomit. So I have literally have a vomit vacuum on the mouth of the spider.
Well, if you...
And, but when it's done right, the venom just flows right into a glass capillary tube and is pure. Hmm.
Well, on our website at sciencefriday.com, you can actually see one of these spiders in action and shooting the venom out. So if you want to go to sciencefriday.com, you can see... Dr. Binford's spiders. We're talking spiders this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. How did you get started with this? What made you interested in venomous spiders?
Well, I'll start by telling you how I got interested in spiders. I was very lucky as an undergraduate to have an opportunity to work with Ann Ripstra at Miami University on a project in Peru. And, you know, I had grown up with an interest in the outdoors and biology, but I hadn't thought that much about spiders. Mm-hmm. But this project was focused on spiders. And I spent a summer in Peru watching social spiders, which were fantastic. And that opened my eyes to just how diverse spiders are, how the general message of spiders are nasty is not accurate at all. Mm-hmm. And also about just how little we knew about spiders. And so they present a really great opportunity for discovery. Right. At the species level, at characteristics of the organisms. And so I was introduced to the process of science and with that opportunity, and I recognized that, wow, I could make a contribution, and there's a lot that we need to learn about spiders. Mm-hmm. Now, my interest in venom sprouted out of an interest that started back in Peru in biodiversity in general. So spiders are diverse. There are about 40,000 species of them that we know and many more that are yet to be discovered. And each of them has to capture prey to live. And so they have venom as one of their, you know, part of their arsenal for doing that. And a venom of a single spider can have 50 to 100 different components in it. And we know very little about the composition of those mixes, but we know enough to know that the venoms differ a lot among species. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, there are 40,000 species, each with 50 to 100 different toxic components. That's just a world of diversity. And we've just scratched the surface of beginning to explore diversity. So it's a great way to study how biodiversity originates. Mm-hmm. So I really use it as a tool to study the evolution of biodiversity.
Tell me about this basement in Los Angeles.
The famous Los Angeles basement. Well, it had been discovered in the 50s that a species related to the brown recluse had been brought up to Los Angeles and colonized a few places. And so the species, it's called Loxosceles laeta. Loxosceles is the genus that includes the brown recluse. And the brown recluse is one of the few that has venom components that can actually cause damage when they bite people. And the species from South America that's in the basement of the Goodwill in L.A., is a large relative of the brown recluse. Now, it's been there for nearly 50 years and isn't linked to any problems outside of that area. But it's a great way for me to go get a spider that's native to South America for my comparative research.
Hmm. When you milk the spiders of their venom, I know with snakes they make anti-venom out of it, right? Do you do that with spiders too?
Yeah, they do. So one of the best way we have for treating venomous bites is by raising antibodies against those same toxins. And then you can inject antibodies into bite victims, and the antibodies will neutralize the toxins in the venoms. And so, collecting those venoms is the starting point for creating the anti-venoms that are used for treatment.
And how does the venom attack us? What does it do to us if we're bitten?
Well, brown recluse, so that differs depending on the species, mm-hmm. but the brown recluse group has a toxin, which is what captured my interest in them. It's a toxin that's called sphingomyelinase D, an enzyme, and it works by snipping a molecule in cell membranes, a molecule called sphingomyelin that's found everywhere, and that causes cells to rupture. Now, that creates a little local problem, but the problem that causes the damage in people is an immune reaction to something about that clipping of the cells. And so it's a complex cascade of immune events that we're still trying to fully understand.
All right. And
so that means that – I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to rudely break in as I normally do every week because we have to go to a break. Okay? So Dr. Binford, stay with us. We'll be right back talking with Greta Binford, assistant professor of biology, Lewis and Clark College in Portland. We're going to take a break and bring in another spider expert. And if one spider is not enough, how about two? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking for the rest of the hour about spiders. My guest is Dr. Greta Binford, associate professor of biology at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. You were telling me before I rudely interrupted about how spider venom works. Does it attack the nervous system eventually or what?
It does. Well, so venoms are these mixtures. The enzyme I was talking about in the brown recluse venoms is just one component. So most spider venoms, I mean, they're there to immobilize insect prey primarily. And so they have a complex of toxins that have very specific activity on the nervous system. And so, they're neurotoxins. And what's exciting for many people about that is that the specificity with which they target the nervous system is really impressive. And we've learned a lot from that specificity about the diversity of what are called ion channels in the nervous system. And there's a lot of excitement about potential for drugs and insecticides and specific applications of that diversity.
Phil in Syracuse, New York, welcome to Science Friday. Hi,
yes,
Phil. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm here.
Yes.
A couple of questions. One, dealing with the topic you were just dealing with, are all known spider species venomous to some degree? And the second one, though, I'm really interested in my house, down in my basement, I've got these spiders. I've looked them up. They're called house spiders. They only seem to exist in the house. They seem to sit around for months doing nothing. I chase them out of the basement.
Couch potato spiders.
And what are they? Do they just eat each other? I find what looks like pregnant ones, and they don't really build much of a web, just kind of this
lazy,
silky thing. And
they have a TV click
next to them. They just cannibalize each other? I mean...
Okay, I'll get to that after I answer your first question. Most spiders are venomous, but there are a couple groups that don't have venom. One is an orb weaver called Euloboridae, or feather-legged spider, and they're common, actually, but they simply wrap their prey to death.
Okay.
Grim.
And
do
they have fangs, or...?
They have fangs, yeah,
but
and
not
a lot of spiders use...
Yeah.
So the way spiders capture prey varies enormously across species. So some species use venom. Others don't use venom very much, but they crush prey with their jaws.
Uh-huh.
Others use silk to wrap prey and immobilize. Some use a combination. Most use a combination of those tactics.
Cool. Okay.
So the relative role of venom varies a lot, and that's something that's very interesting to many of us.
Yeah.
Now, the spider in your basement.
Yeah.
the common name house spider isn't super informative.
It's got really long legs, very small body, and it just hangs out in corners.
Maybe it's not a spider.
It seems to do nothing for months on end. Sometimes.
How do you know it's a spider?
So if it has long...
But
if it's in a web, it's going to be a spider probably. My guess is you're talking about something we call a falsid, or a cellar spider is the common name.
Okay.
And they're super common, and they have kind of small, roundish to cylindrical bodies and long hair-like legs.
Yeah.
They're actually doing a lot down there. They're great for eating other arthropods, including other spiders.
Well, we have centipedes. I suppose there's a war going on in my basement. That's what I always think. The war between the centipedes.
Lucky you.
they're
completely harmless spiders, though.
Yeah.
They're commonly referred to in some areas as daddy long legs as
that's
well.
That's what my
Well, no, it's not a daddy long legs.
Okay.
Do they eat flies?
The common name... Daddy longleg is confusing because some people refer to what arachnologists call opiliones or harvestmen as daddy longlegs, and those aren't spiders at all; they're arachnids. So, but the other form of daddy longleg is a falsid that hangs in webs in corners of cellars. So, my guess is that's what it is, but I'd really have to see a photo. You're welcome to send me a photo,
and I can
confirm.
Thanks, Phil. 1-800-989-8255. Now for a spider of another kind, we're going to bring in another spider expert. This is a spider with an unusual trait. If you saw the last Harry Potter movie, you know, you caught a glimpse of a whip spider. Believe me, it wasn't pretty. Whip spiders have incredibly long front legs, or whips, that they weave around. But my next guest has discovered that the spiders can amazingly behave very nicely. Dr. Linda Rayer is Senior Research Associate in the Department of Entomology at Cornell, and she is so fond of spiders that she started the Eight-Legged Ambassadors. That's Cornell's spider outreach program. Yes, even spiders have an outreach program. She says that she and her students have persuaded thousands of school children and community groups that spiders are hip, not horrible. She joins us from Cornell. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Tell us about this whip spider. In fact, we have a video on our website at sciencefriday.com of the whip spider. It's just absolutely fascinating. It almost looks like a lobster to me.
Well, I should clarify something. So the so-called whip spiders, it's not a very good common name. They're actually not spiders.
Mm-hmm.
They're other arachnids, and I'm going to refer to them as amblypygids. It's an order at the same level as the spiders, scorpions, harvestmen, and so on. So these amblypygids are an entirely different group. But like all spiders, they have two body parts, eight legs, and pedipalps. And in the case of the amblypygids, the palps are used they have a stiletto sharp tip that basically spines the prey.
Wow. And one thing that you discovered and you published is that the spider acts very lovingly to its young, maternally.
Yeah. It turns out that these amblypygids, at least prior to sexual maturity, are found in incredibly interactive, friendly groups. Instead of the youngsters just sitting together somewhat near mom, instead they're constantly touching each other with their whips, and there's this constant state of interaction. It's really exciting to watch.
And then the video we have on our website of the whip spider, I'll have to continue to call that if you'll forgive me, actually shows that the mom is carrying the spiders in a little group on her back?
Well, this is typical of a number of the groups of arachnids, so the amblypygids, the vinegaroons, and scorpions. Their youngsters are born and then crawl onto mom's back and stay there for an instar, so about a week, where they're totally helpless. And if they fall off, they don't have any chance of survival. After that, they climb off the mother's back. And what I've got there is a video that shows the youngsters actually molting and coming off the mother's back. I was really lucky to see it.
How lucky do you have to be? You just have to be there at the right moment. Right? When it was
out of many, many arachnids, yeah. I've only seen it a couple of times.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a couple of phone calls or two here. Let's go to Terry. Hi, Terry. You know, Norman, Oklahoma.
Hello. Yes, I'm calling because I just started doing backyard and house biology in our house several years ago. And if you just stop to look, you can see a lot of things. And so we have videotaped a black and yellow Argiope couple mating, and it's a really exciting process to watch. And letting those spiders live in your basement or the jumping spiders live in the windows, we've decided is a good thing because they eat other critters that you probably don't want in the house. And the most exciting thing I found last year was in our basement, there was a very large wolf spider known as Geolycosa missouriensis on my basement floor.
Oh, I've seen many of those.
And so we put her outside. I consulted with my brother, who is Jim Carroll at the University of Missouri, and he's the editor of the Journal of Arachnology. The guests might know who he is.
Yes, we know Jim.
We do indeed.
Yes, and he's a graduate. His PhD is from Cornell. And actually, I just went down to Archbold Research Station to visit Jim a few weeks ago, and he works on another burrowing wolf spider.
Wow, wow.
So that was a very interesting experience.
Hey, are wolf spiders that common? Are they the big basement spiders? I'll ask my guest, Dr. Ray.
They are very common. I don't know if Linda wants to chime in here, but they are among the most common spiders that people see in the United States. They're very diverse in North America, and they're harmless.
Do you think that they look so hairy? Is that what makes them so unattractive to people?
This is Linda.
Yeah.
I've thought about this a lot, and I think it's that one, they don't have two cute little eyes. And instead, most of them have eight eyes, and the way they walk is much jerkier than many of the insects, and so it just seems more extraterrestrial to people. Also, the way silk hangs down, it's easy to walk into silk or into a spider in a web without really feeling that there ought to be something that close to you.
Is there a proper way to handle a spider? If you don't want it in your bathtub, you don't want to step on it, but you want to get it. You want to liberate it. How's that?
In a cup.
Yes. And I just recommend against grabbing them with your hands. Most spiders are not aggressive, but, if you squeeze it enough, it'll bite.
And is the venom for most spiders something to be worried about, or does the common household spider give you just a little pain and you don't have to go to the emergency room?
True. The common household spiders are not harmful at all. And in many cases, the bites are not felt. And in contrast to insect bites, spiders' bites don't tend to cause itching, maybe a little bit of redness, maybe a little bit of soreness, but the majority wouldn't cause any reaction at all.
1-800-989-8255. Can you have the Amblypedia as a house pet? I mean,
yeah, actually, the amblypidgids are wonderful pets. You can keep them in relatively small containers. And what I found is that I had originally been keeping them in solitarily, just by themselves, and I think they were relatively depressed. And so once I started allowing the youngsters to stay in groups, they were much more active, much more interactive. And so basically you just need a container with a good bark substrate up against the glass that they can move on.
Well, two questions then. Where do you get them? And what do you feed them if you're going to do this?
Most of the spiders I feed everything on crickets or flies. And I actually buy crickets by about 3,000 every couple of weeks for my lab. Mm-hmm. Where do you get them? Actually, I've gotten most of mine from internet dealers. And the ones that I think are particularly interesting is this Tanzanian species that you've got on the website, Daemodiadema.
Don't you think there's something poetic about buying spiders on the web?
It's an amazing world.
I'm glad you got the joke. Thank you. We're talking about spiders this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Greta Binford and Linda Rayo, both arachnologists. Is that the right word?
Yes.
Yes. And did either of you ever have a fear of spiders that you had to overcome? Or were you just born loving spiders? Or not being afraid of them might be a problem.
For me, Greta, you want to go first?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. So I'm from Denver. I know that there are spiders there. I basically do not remember spiders growing up at all. When I started my graduate work at the University of Kansas, this was my first real exposure to eastern deciduous forest. And my first semester, I was walking around outside, and I was seeing these amazing spiders that were so cool, and I was bringing them back to the entomology grad students to identify. And they were very snooty with me and said, you know, I don't know what they are. They're spiders. Who cares? And I found a very nice-looking grad student who was also interested in spiders, and we did science together, and I married him. So this is how I got interested in spiders.
It fell into your web.
It was a romantic adventure for me.
Let's go to Terry in Lewes, Delaware. Hi, Terry. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm an arachnophile from way back, and I had for 13 years a Chilean rose-haired tarantula that I would take into my classrooms at the beginning of each school year. I was a middle school teacher, still am. And so we would have what I would call, you know, Arachnid 101, and I would teach them about the spider. Some of them were terrified of at the get-go or used it for a great excuse to jump out of their seats and make a lot of hollering noises. But eventually, once I'd talked them through it, and I walked around holding Rosie in my hands and showed them the different parts, the fangs, the silk coming out, the eye spot, they got fascinated. I told them they didn't have to touch it, didn't have to even come near it, but if they wanted to, they could touch it while I held her. And almost, you know, all of them ended up wanting to touch her and becoming very fond of her. I regret that after 13 years, she died recently. And I tried to...
13 years, that's a pretty
good
run.
Yeah, apparently they could grow, you know, live to about 35 if they were well treated. And when I got her, she was the same size as when she died, so I'm not sure how old she was.
Let me ask this, because we're running out of time. Are there, and thank you for the call, are there spider clubs that people can join who have spiders for pets?
Yes. There's an excellent organization in the United States, the American Arachnological Society, and it's the best scientists in the world are part of this organization. But also many lay people come to our meetings. You can learn a lot at the website, www.americanarachnology.org. There are great links there for general information about spiders and to a new book that's a manual of spiders of the North America, which is a great start for people.
Can you learn how to raise an amply pigeon?
There are other hobbyist focus groups. Yeah. And Linda, do you want to chime in there?
Yeah. Probably the first place I would look is petbugs.com. And this has a lot of information on care sheets. And also, I think my references are there on how to take care of amblypigeons, basically. Mm.
Is a spider a bug?
No, it's an arachnid.
You said petbugs.com. I thought maybe even they are making that mistake. So.
They're willing to subsume the spiders.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, I see people cringing all over America who are arachnophobic. So I'm hoping that we haven't really upset too many people today. But I've been
thrilled with the calls from the arachnophiles and the arachnocurious. I think that's a good sign.
The arachnocurious. Well, on our website, when we have the spiders shown on the videos, we have arachnofriendly, I think is the name we've dubbed them. I want to thank you both, ladies, for taking time to be with us today. And good luck with your spiders.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Dr. Greta Binford is Assistant Professor of Biology at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. That's in Portland, Oregon. Dr. Linda Rayer is Senior Research Associate in the Department of Entomology at Cornell University. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Audio engineers are Neil Rausch and Josh Rokerson here in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We've got some great videos of those spiders if you're interested. You can leave us email there and blog and podcast. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there, free teaching material for you to take into your classrooms. And maybe spiders are a good way to start kids thinking about science. Have a great weekend and a great St. Patrick's Day. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.